Remember, Katrina, you must call me Doctor.
Have you ever thought what it's like to be wanderers in the fourth dimension? To be exiles?
This is the Doctor speaking. Well, one of them. Is there anybody there?
I hate computers and refuse to be bullied by them.
And their leader was called?
The Doctor.
Are you trying to tell us that you are the Doctor?
That's right. I've reversed the polarity of the neutron flow so the TARDIS would be free of the force field.
You may be a Doctor, but I'm the Doctor. The definite article, you might say. Would you like a jelly, baby?
I'm a Time Lord.
I'm the Doctor. Or will be if this regeneration works out. And it seems not a moment too soon.
How do you do? I'm the Doctor.
I am the Doctor!
I'm the Doctor, by the way. What's your name?
Rose.
Nice to meet you, Rose. Run for your life!
Fantastic.
Yeah, I'm the Doctor.
I'm Aldi.
Hello, I'm the Doctor.
Both eyes are cool.
It's not working.
We're both reversing the polarity.
Yes, I know that.
There's two of us. I'm reversing it, you're reversing it back again. We're confusing the polarity.
Anyone lose a fez?
And welcome back, one and all, to right here at geeksofdoom.com, where we are recording the TARDIS Blend, the podcast looking at the weekly episodes of Doctor Who. My name is Greg Davies.
And I'm Human Zygon Tom Sheridar.
And joining us as our special guest on this episode of TARDIS Blend is Associate Editor of geeksofdoom.com, Chris McDavid, otherwise known as Henchman21. Chris, welcome aboard.
Pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you in the house. And boy, what an episode to jump on. I got to tell you, I'm over the moon and absolutely ecstatic about this particular episode. I thought it was a stellar episode, absolutely outstanding. And in my mind, it's the best of the season thus far.
It was certainly a heavy episode.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on.
I wasn't as enthusiastic.
Really, Tom?
No, I love where they took the Zygons. I like where they rooted the story. But this was not the Zygon invasion as much as it was the Slogon invasion. Another one of those instances, Greg, where I felt like we got half a story that really probably should have and could have been easily combined into one satisfying episode, maybe even a 90-minute episode.
I see where you're coming from in the sense of like merging them together as a feature length episode, but I can't see it being a singular episode of say 45 minutes like a regular Doctor Who episode. They just felt like there was so much in there. Not only in terms of the subtext and symbolism and the metaphors that were in the episode, which we'll get to in a minute, but also in terms of the exploration of where UNIT has been since the day of the Doctor. We had a glimpse of them at the beginning of the season. What was going on with Osgood? How is it that she's appearing in this episode when we saw her die in a previous episode, which I must add, I was absolutely delighted how they just resolved that in a very, very quick snap fashion, and they were on with it.
Did they, though, Greg?
What do you mean?
We didn't get resolution.
Well, which one is it?
Does it matter? Yeah. I don't think it matters.
I don't think it matters.
Which one died when we saw her? Maybe that was...
I have a theory, but...
What's your theory, Chris?
My theory is that it's the human one because of the scene where she was using her inhaler while underneath the desk, and I don't know...
Yes.
There was the bit in The Three Doctors where one of the Osgoods had the inhaler and they kind of looked at each other and I think they recognized which one was which from that.
But did...
Or maybe it was the Zygon who had the inhaler then.
But yeah, that's the question. Like, did the Osgood that was in the episode in which we believed she was dead, which clearly she did perish, did she have her inhaler in that episode? I don't recall. Yeah. I mean, it really was a non-specific... nobody was really looking for that back then. You know, it might be worth actually going back and watching those last two episodes of the previous season to find out whether she did. That may not necessarily be the calling card for who the human Osgood is. I lean towards the fact that she may be the human Osgood, but I don't think in the context of the story, I'm not sure it actually matters.
Yeah.
What matters
it
is
totally
that she's,
doesn't matter.
Yeah. What she I mean, matters is she's kind of a symbolic character representing the tenacious peace that the humans have formed with the Zygons.
Can I stop and say, did anybody else find it awkward when she made the comment about the doctor's boxers? it didn't work for you that time. It was like one step too far. Like, she took too much, and on camera, it just didn't translate.
I didn't really get that kind of reaction. No, I actually found it amusing, to be perfectly honest with you. Because one of the contentious issues among long-term Doctor Who fans is, why the hell did he wear question marks on his costume? In the 80s, like, it began with the later Tom Baker episodes and carried through right up until Sylvester McCoy. And that was something, that was driven by the showrunner at the time. But a lot of people complained about that because, you know, he's not called Doctor Who in the television series. He's the Doctor. So the idea that there's a question just really was irrelevant. Although Stephen Moffat has like brought that back in, to this particular season. And I suppose it carries on to the first question that must never be answered. Maybe the question mark is a symbolism of that. I don't know. It was nice to see her carrying on her fandom of the Doctor, no matter what she was, whether she was human or Zygon. It was wonderful to see the question marks on her outfit.
It's certainly a good throwback for the longer term fans.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. There was a lot, actually, in this episode. One of them was apparently in the unit base. There was a framed picture of the first Doctor somewhere. I read about it online. I haven't caught it in the episode yet. I'm probably not looking close enough, but...
Well, I saw it.
Oh,
it
you did?
Pretty easy.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a few references in there throughout this particular episode to previous episodes, particularly classic Doctor Who. What are your ratings? I'm giving this one a 5 out of 5. I thought it was outstanding. Tom, what are you going to give it?
I'm going to give it a 3.
Really?
Yep.
I'm so surprised. I thought this would have been right up there for you. I mean,
I loved everything in it, but I didn't like the story. It didn't flow well for me.
Really? Oh, I'm surprised.
No, it was too slow. It was way too slow.
I'm really, really surprised. I would have thought you would have given a much higher rating. What about you, Chris? What are you going to give this a rating of?
I'm going to split the difference and give it a 4. I'm kind of with Tom. I think it's the first half of a complete thought.
Yeah.
And I really need to see the second half of it.
Well, actually, now that you mention that, I mean, for me, I mean, when I was watching this, I was just entranced by the whole thing. It just worked so well for me. And, I mean, depending on the quality of the next episode, this two-parter, for me anyway, could be up there as a first viewing recommendation, like Blink or The Doctor's Wife or that Weeping Angel two-parter from Series 5 with Matt Smith.
I mean, I might give it that, but there was just too much like backstory that you sort of have to juggle around to. Like for you, Greg, it was a much more powerful episode because Zygons are like your thing. I saw them and I was like, okay, you have succeeded in making Zygons entirely creepy, disgusting looking growth. You know, like growths that live on like disgusting fat people that never move. Like, you know, like people big as houses, you know?
I don't get where like, you're going with this.
Some giant like mold spore that's just come up and attached itself and now like the skin kind of bubbled over top of it and then it ripped off and then grew into a human Zygon. And it's disgustingly awesome. And that's the it's so creepy and I love them. I hope to see them all over the damn place at every single convention from here on out.
I like the I guess you guys caught a lot of the that there was a lot of sci-fi references in this episode and there were a lot of political references. I want to start with this the obvious sci-fi one. The twist of the reverse use of the pod people, that pod people trope. Instead of the pod people coming out of the pods, it turns into like a prison for the actual humans. Oh, that was the tits. I loved that little twist. In fact, Jenna Coleman's performance in this episode was brilliant. I mean, the direction she had was superb. I had no idea Clara was Bonnie the Zygon until it was revealed. That was so brilliantly paced.
I totally saw that.
Did you?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
I didn't see it coming, but I agree with you, Greg, that especially in the last 5-10 minutes, her performance was top-notch.
Yeah.
She's doing much better this season.
Yeah, I'm expecting a lot more from her in the next episode. I had a glance at the preview, the Next Time trailer, just before we started recording, and she looks menacing. Clara Oswald would have made a superb villain. She really would have made a superb villain. If you recall,
she may be a villain.
Yeah, well, if you recall a couple of during the last season and the season before, one of the recurring ideas and thoughts that kept bubbling up in the TARDIS blend was, what if she turns out to be a villain? What if she turns out to be against the Doctor in some way or form? That was really prevalent during the lead up to the Missy mystery being resolved, but I kind of see we're getting a little bit of that with this particular two-parter, which is nice. So, but very much like the Body Snatchers films, there was a lot of parallels between political symbolism of self-radicalization in this particular episode. And it seemed to me that the Doctor was being the only sane one. You know, more bombs will only radicalize more, the ISIS-style video messages and so on. I thought this was a superb example of modern social commentary integrated into Doctor Who and very much in line with the Pertwee episodes of the 70s. But some people found it very heavy-handed and, in the UK especially, offensive. But if you follow the Doctor's lines in this episode, it seems to me that the commentary is more on how people actually get radicalized, and it was more of a criticism of how the governments take action with that rather than it being a criticism of Muslims and immigration.
Yeah.
I read it just through our own political situation, right. You know, and what we've done in the past 10 years. But then I stopped and was like, you know, you really could apply it to so many different levels.
Yeah. I think it walked. I didn't find it. I think it was just on the edge of being heavy-handed. I mean, it wasn't subtle in the least.
Oh, no.
But I think it did a fair job of trying to find, maybe not both sides of the story, but a different solution. And it's kind of, it's what I like probably most about Doctor Who, which is that it's not cynical. It's so hopeful, and that's kind of what the Doctor represents is kind of the hope of a third option.
Yeah, I love the line in this episode where Kate Stewart is saying, "You left us in a real mess here, Doctor," and he was like, "Yes, of course, that's peace. That's what peace right. is. You know, it's not clean. It's supposed to be something that you work at." I want to highlight that Peter Harness, who wrote this episode, and I think he wrote the second part, which we'll be reviewing next week, is also the writer for that awful Moon episode last year that had all the abortion social commentaries in it. So it seems to be that he is the writer in New Who that's bringing, political and social commentary into his stuff. Kill the Moon is a really good example of when it doesn't work. And I think the Zygon invasion is, he's upped his game. He probably received the feedback from the fan community and also from people working at the BBC, that was way too heavy-handed and it took away from the story. And now he's actually really done a fantastic integration of those elements into the actual storytelling. I thought his efforts in this episode towered above and beyond Kill the Moon.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, a lot of the, I think my opinions on that will again depend on next week's episode, just to see if he can stick the landing on the metaphor or if it goes too heavy-handed again.
Right, right. Well, our ratings, putting it up to a 10-point rating, works out to be an 8 out of 10, which is not a shabby rating for a good, solid Doctor Who episode. Tom, we're still in this season of TARDIS Blend, we still seem to be struggling to get a 10 out of 10. We've yet to,
I hope we get one.
Yeah, because I don't know about you, but like, I feel much more optimistic and happier with this season than what I was last season. I feel
last
like
season, we were ready to bolt.
Yeah, Peter Capaldi has like hit his groove. He was superb in this episode, by the way. I'm just digging the whole Doctor Who with the sunglasses and the guitar now. Like,
I think you would. It's almost like they're listening to TARDIS Blend, you know.
You know what
6 months in the past when they were filming them?
Yeah.
No. If you know anything about the TARDIS Blend, you'd know Greg is like a super metalhead.
Well, we're
guitar and glasses.
Yeah,
man, I'm just saying.
Well, let's just. I want to mention the glasses for this episode. I loved how they were just used as like a fashion accessory, like an adornment for the Doctor this episode. They weren't used as a sonic device; they were just part of the costume. It worked really well, but you know what? That made me think, Tom. It reminded me of the 3D glasses that David Tennant had, and that they had a purpose. Do you remember that? It was able to identify the void stuff.
Man, I love that.
And I
love
wonder
so much that you brought that up. That's my recommendation for this week.
Oh, is it? I'll have to look up the actual episode.
He's just so nonchalantly like, oh, yeah, hey, by the way, he's actually did it on purpose.
Well, I'm wondering whether the sonic glasses have actually got some kind of software built into them that enables the Doctor to identify who's human and who's Zygon. I wonder if that's going to pop up.
Oof.
No.
I don't think I would like that.
No, because then you get into, like, brain hacking and then they become, like, hypnotizing glasses. No thanks.
Well, then we get They Live, and that's awesome. Kind of.
Yeah, I don't know.
I guess reverse They Live.
That's a little bit like, yeah, They Live, but also, I mean, it would also be a bit too repetitive, I guess would be the word I'm looking for, with the comparison to the David Tennant glasses. I think I would like to, I mean, I wouldn't like to see it be the resolution, but I would like it to be implied that somehow the Doctor knows who's a Zygon and who's a human.
Well, because, no, because he was asking. What's her name? We were just talking about her.
Osgood,
yeah. He was asking Osgood if she was the original. Why couldn't he just put his glasses on?
Well, he could
always use it as a fake out with when he meets some of the other Zygons and just try to convince them that he could see the difference.
Yeah.
Without actually being able to.
Are you sure, right?
Well,
I accept that answer.
Remember, the Doctor, in the day of the Doctor, he created that device that goes ding. Maybe he perfected it and he integrated it into the sonic sunglasses. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, there could be something built into there. I don't think it's, I think we're dwelling on it a little bit too much. I just think that it, you know, that's what it reminded me of. And it would be nice to see if they use that as a functionality of the glasses in the next episode, because that would kind of be cool. It would be a nice little twist to add into that new device. I'm warming up to them as long as they're used properly, like they were in this episode. Like, they weren't actually used as a device at all. It was used to, like, for Capaldi to stand there and do the Richard Nixon pose outside the presidential plane. That was great. That was a great shot.
Well, he did their, he undid Osgood's handcuffs at one point.
I completely overlooked that. So, I mean, that's how good it was in this episode. That, I mean, you know, there was no magic tricks. He didn't light a candle with it. You know, he didn't blow something up with it. It was good. It was good.
Yeah, that's why I think I wouldn't want the glasses to be able to tell the difference. I think that would get into the Sonics as a magic wand kind of thing.
Yeah. Tom, what about you? Were you okay with the Sonics in this episode? Because I know you've been probably one of the harshest critics of it.
I hate them, but I do really appreciate that they're doing something different. So I don't want to like crap all over them that hard. You know, like, it's different. They did something different. That's good.
All right. Any bad points that you guys want to bring up about this episode? Any criticisms? I know that there were a lot of American fans that were a little critical about certain geographic facts in this episode with regards to what flags were used in the New Mexico scenes, and also with the way that the American soldiers involved with UNIT in Turkmenistan, which was pronounced for some reason in the episode as Turmezistan or something like that, that they were very inept when they confronted their Zygon relatives and they were duped into being into the church and being killed and so on. There was a lot of criticism about that. It didn't bug me so much. But what did you guys think? Did anything like that stand out to you as major criticisms?
I mean, you know, yeah, I guess so.
It didn't, the scene outside the church, it didn't really bother me that they were inept Americans. It wasn't the best scene in the episode, because you kind of see that all the time with these kind of body swap, anytime the body snatcher idea is kind of used.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm the real doctor. Right. Yeah. That's a trope. It's used frequently in body snatching kind of things. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it was inevitable that was going to be included in some way or form.
Right. So it didn't bother me that they were Americans or whatever, but just the scene wasn't the high point of the episode. It was kind of there just to fill a little bit of time.
Right.
Like, they needed a scene in that middle 20 minutes or whenever, and they just kind of stuck that in there. Could have done without it.
You think it was filler?
More or less. It didn't do much for the episode.
Well, we didn't see where those Zygons ended up going, which is true.
Right.
That is absolutely true, though it did lead us into discovering Osgood being hidden underground.
Right.
So it was kind of...
We find out that the Zygons are evil. They had already kind of showed us that the Zygons were evil.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? This is the whole part about the whole emphasis of the Zygons in this particular episode, is that it's not the entire race. It's a splinter group, which fits into the whole, Islamic terror style groups. And that symbolism being used, like, they even had a flag, for crying out loud, that looked like the ISIS flag. I mean, there was, you know, they were really emphasizing the fact that this was not this. These guys did not, and this is very much like what you hear about the commentary of radicalized terrorist versus, you know, the community of Muslims or Arabs or that what have you, that they're not a representative of the larger population thereof. They're a splinter group. They're a faction. They're a radicalized group. They're on the fringe. Yeah. And that's really what they were emphasizing in this video, in this particular episode. I thought it was good.
Yeah. Again, that was kind of the part where it almost got to be too heavy-handed, because, I mean, you knew that they were making an ISIS allegory with it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of, you know, I felt it was like, it was a really good balance for me. Like, you know, there comes a point in certain media where you can tell that they've gone over the line in terms of what kind of message they're trying to put out, to the point that it feels like propaganda of some kind. And then there's the other side of the line, which is not enough social commentary. You know, it's just pure entertainment. I think this particular episode straddled that line very well. It was so much superior to the writer's previous effort with Kill the Moon. Much better. The other thing, this is just a side thought, the Doctor we see at the beginning of the episode, he's playing a song on his guitar, and it turns out to be Amazing Grace. And I thought that was an unusual selection. I don't know whether that's going to have any symbolic meaning or anything representative of this episode or next episode in terms of the storyline, but sometimes they do select the music based on the contents of an episode, as they did with the Beethoven allegory with the when he was explaining the bootstrap paradox. So I'm wondering whether that may have some kind of connection. No idea. All right, the question I have for you guys, jumping into the main spoilers, this has absolutely nothing to do with the ongoing overarching plot for the entire season, but we did see it at the beginning of this episode. What's in the Osgood box?
I'm going to say Pez.
Oh.
Pez with doctor-shaped heads.
There's a head in the box, like Gwyneth Paltrow in Seven.
No. Like, for like Eleven's head, like Pez head.
Oh, okay.
That's what's in the box.
It's a box of Pez, all right. I have no idea. Chris, do you have any idea what it might be?
They're going to open it up, and the last thing in there will be hope. I don't know.
I think they're going to open it up, and there's going to be a little note in there written by the Doctor which says, "Let Zygons be Zygons."
Oh. Ooh.
That's rough. Dad joke of the year.
I hope it happens.
Yeah. We've got a mention of hybrids in this episode, part of the ongoing storyline, which seems to be moving up to the season finale episodes of Heaven Sent and Hell Bent. Still no clue as to what the hybrids are. I've still got a number of theories. I don't think anything in this episode points to the season finale at all. It doesn't key into any of the theories that I've seen, and I think it would be overkill if they had the Zygons being a major antagonist for the season finale as well. But yet again, Tom, the nemesis of this episode, another warlike race.
Yes.
Which,
well, a faction.
Yeah, oh, well, a faction. Yeah, we've got a terrorism faction here. That's absolutely true. So who knows where this is leading, but I'm really intrigued as to what the hybrid theme is heading towards. Chris, you've been watching the episodes of the season so far. I mean, do you have any thoughts about the ongoing story arc at all that you wanted to throw in here?
I don't have any big theories at this point. I think it'll probably be something completely out of the blue. That, or maybe they'll just bring back Daleks and they'll make some kind of Time Lord Dalek hybrid.
Okay, you think it's going to tie into the opening two episodes of the season?
I'm willing to bet that Missy is going to come back at some point,
right,
and tie into it.
Right,
Missy is a Zygon.
Well, I don't know about that, but I will say that the new Who crew have been known to resurrect or reboot ideas from classic Who. And I will say that it's not a new idea of having the Master team up with the Daleks to the point where he's deluded, or in this case, she's deluded, into believing she's in charge, and it ends up biting her in the ass. So this may actually, you might actually be right on track here in terms of what's going to happen with the hybrid. So we'll wait and see how it goes. And Stephen Moffat does have a tendency to make fans like dig deep and do deep analysis and speculate all these great, lengthy theories about what may happen. And he does end up turning to the most obvious resolutions, with the seasons, as we can see from his patterns in his writing and everything. So you could well be right about this.
Yeah, I mean, this episode was definitely just a red herring to throw everybody off. I don't think the Zygon hybrids will have much to do anything.
Right. Yeah. I think it was just a line that was dropped in there to keep people thinking of hybrid. The hybrid theory is happening. It's real and it's going on with the season. So I think you're dead right about that. I think it was just dropped in there as a, hey, by the way, this is going on. And we're heading towards this. It has nothing to do with the story, but just to keep you awake.
Yeah. Yeah. The Doctor's paying attention to it. He knows that there's some kind of hybrid thing that's going to happen. Don't forget it.
Any predictions for next episode, guys?
I predict that all of next episode, either one of the two things will happen. Either all of next episode can be condensed into 10 minutes, or this episode can. One of the two.
Oh, okay. So you're making a call on the format of the two-parters this season.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. What about you, Chris? Any predictions, whether it's about show format or the substance of the plot?
Pretty sure that the Doctor will solve everything.
He usually does.
He'll figure out something.
That's true. That's true. That's absolutely true. But sometimes, there are episodes of Doctor Who where things just kind of happen the way they happen, and he has to just walk away from it. And that has happened before. So it could well be that may actually be part of it. I want to lead in. My prediction is that I believe the Osgood box is tied into the deadly ZX9 gas that they mentioned in this episode. Now, that leads me to believe that that's going to have something to do with the conclusion of this particular two-parter. But it also leads me into my classic Doctor Who recommendation, because the Z gas was actually created by one of the Doctor's companions. And that was Harry. What's his name? Let me bring it up here. Harry Sullivan, who was a companion with the Doctor when Sarah Jane was a companion with the Doctor. And he was featured in The Terror of the Zygons, released all the way back in 1975, the first appearance of the Zygons. And that's going to be my classic Doctor Who recommendation for people to check out. Terror of the Zygons, their first appearance. Lots of parallels with that particular serial and this one. Well worth checking out. And Tom, your recommendation was the two-parter from the second series of Doctor Who, Army of Ghosts and Doomsday, which was the one where we finally got to see the Cybermen versus the Daleks.
Yes.
And that's where he was wearing the 3D glasses.
That's how you use glasses. Guys, we need any proper functionality to be cool.
All right, Chris, what about you? Do you have any Doctor Who recommendations, classic or new?
Not a ton. I was actually gonna make a comic recommendation.
Ooh,
that's a kind of my thing around here. Not an actual Doctor Who comic per se, although those are all pretty good, but I was actually going to recommend, if nobody out there is reading it, the most recent Silver Surfer run by Dan Slott, Mike Allred, and Laura Allred. because it's very much in the tone of Doctor Who.
This is part of
that is a good recommendation. I've read it.
Yeah, this is part of the old new Marvel series, correct?
I'm trying to think how many. There's like two trades out already. It's before any of the newest stuff.
Oh, so it's before the recent Secret Wars?
Correct.
Stuff. Oh, okay.
You basically have to know nothing about Silver Surfer. Like, a cursory knowledge. He's a flying dude who's got cosmic powers, used to be, a slave to Galactus. That'll do the trick.
Yeah.
Yeah. They'll explain everything that you need to know. It doesn't tie into any Marvel events. The third trade that I don't think is out yet is kind of cursory to the Secret Wars stuff, but it's still off by itself, so you don't even really need to be reading Secret Wars or anything connected to it. But it's just got a great story. The Silver Surfer is a stand-in for Doctor Who. He's got a companion. The surfboard is very much like the TARDIS, where it's got kind of a little bit of a mind of its own, and they just kind of travel around the stars. But it's just got a lot of great character moments, fantastic art.
Oh, cool.
So that would be my recommendation.
I'm also going to throw in, as part of our recommendation sequence, I'm going to throw in The Day of the Doctor. There are lots of heavy references to it in this episode, particularly at the beginning, which calls back to when we had the three Doctors united and with the reappearance of the Zygons. That's an absolutely spectacular episode, and people can return to that at any time. So that's definitely one of the recommendations that we can make there. All right, that's it.
Watching this one, I definitely wanted to go back and rewatch the Three Doctors.
Yes, absolutely. And John Hurt, oh, God, isn't he brilliant? Yeah. And, Tom, you were absolutely right that John Hurt made an appearance this season, although it was in a flashback. Tom?
Still counts.
You know, they've been very generous with those flashbacks this season, and I've been very appreciative of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, I agree with you. All right, folks, that's it for this episode of The TARDIS Blend. Chris, where can we catch you online?
You can catch me on Twitter, at Henchman21, and you can catch me most Wednesdays handing out comic review or comic recommendations on the God List and whatever else I feel like writing.
All right. And Tom, where can we find you online, mate?
You can find me over at gigaohm.com. Or better yet, just go check out Greg's stuff.
Well, you can find me.
Check it out.
You can find me at blendover.com for a weekly podcast there, and also Heavy Metal Historian, which can be found at heavymetal666.com. That's all we've got time for this week. Thanks, everyone. We'll catch you on the flip side. Billy Gavin.